could stop him, David picked up the ice cream and tried to cram it back onto the cone. But the cone was shattered, and the ice cream fell over again. Only this time, it landed on the floor. My dad said,
"Leave it, David. I'll get you a new one."
But David didn't listen. His chair shot back and he dove after it.
"No, David, let me get you a new one."
My dad pulled him by the arm, but David wouldn't budge. He grabbed the ice cream and crammed it back onto what was left of his cone. And when the bottom part of his cone crumbled completely away, he started screaming. It was awful. He was like a 200-pound infant, throwing a tantrum on the floor. He was yelling words I couldn't understand, and after a minute of trying to calm him down, my father said,
"Juliana, can you get him another cone?"
The man behind the counter scooped as fast as he could, but in that short time, David knocked over a table and two chairs with his flailing, and managed to smear chocolate everywhere. The checkers and customers at the registers seemed frozen with terror, like David was some sort of monster out to destroy the world. I gave the new cone to my father, who handed it to David, right there on the floor. And while David sat there eating it, my father and I worked around him, putting everything back in order and wiping up the mess. On the walk back to Greenhaven, David acted like nothing had happened. He spurted into his pinwheel and cried, "Orange!" from time to time. But when my dad held open the front door, I could tell that David was tired. Down in his room, David placed the pinwheel on his bed and picked up the puzzle box.
"Why don't you take a rest before you get started on it?"
my dad asked. David shook his head.
"No!" "Okay then, let me help you set it up."
My father pulled a card table from beneath the bed, then swung the legs out and snapped them into place. After he had it shoved up against the wall near the bed, he moved a chair close to it and said,
"There you are, all set up."
David had the box open and was already sifting through the pieces.
"As a goo one, Wowbed."
"I'm glad you like it. You think you might have it done by Wednesday? I can come back and glue it on the ceiling for you then if you'd like."
David nodded, but he was already intent on the puzzle, carefully laying pieces on the table. My father put his hand on his shoulder and said,
"I'll see you Wednesday then, okay?"
He nodded.
"Will you say goodbye to Juliana?"
"Bye,"
he said, but he didn't look up from his box of pieces. "See you later, Uncle David." I tried to sound cheerful, but I didn't feel that way. When we got back into the truck, my dad clicked on his seatbelt and said,
"So?"
I just looked at him and tried to smile.
"Are you as exhausted as I am?"
he said. I nodded. Everything was fine, except for the ice cream. Dad chuckled.
"Except for the ice cream."
Then he turned serious.
"The trouble is, you never know what the ice cream is going to be. Sometimes it's a fly in the room. Sometimes it's the feel of his socks. It's hard to predict everything. Usually getting ice cream is safe."
He shook his head and closed his eyes, thinking things I couldn't imagine. Finally, he turned the ignition and said,
"David lived with your mother and me for a while, before you kids were born. We thought it would be better for him to live with us than to be in a home, but we were wrong."
"But overall, everything went okay today." He ground the gear shift into reverse.
"David has many, many special needs, both emotional and physical. Your mom and I couldn't handle them all. Fortunately, he's happy here. They have programs to teach him how to care for himself, how to dress and bathe and brush his teeth, how to act around others and communicate. They go on outings, and he has a job doing mailings for a doctor's office."
"He does?"
"He goes there every morning during the week to fold mailings and fill envelopes. Greenhaven's been so good for him. He gets an incredible amount of individualized attention. He has his own room, his own friends, his own life."
After a minute, I said, But he's part of the family, Dad. And it just doesn't seem right that he's never been over for a visit, not even on Christmas or Thanksgiving.
He doesn't want to, sweetheart. 1 year, your mother and I insisted he spend Thanksgiving with us, and it was the biggest disaster you can imagine. He broke a window out of the car. He was that upset.
But why haven't we been visiting him? I know you have, but the rest of us. Why not?
Well, it's straining. Your mother finds it incredibly depressing, and I understand that. We both agreed that it was no place to take small children.
He accelerated onto the highway, silent behind the wheel. Finally, he said,
"The years just seem to slip away, Juliana. One day you have a baby in your arms, and the next you realize she's very nearly a woman."
He smiled at me sadly.
"I love David, but he is a burden, and I guess I wanted to protect you from that. But I realize now that all of this has affected you and the family."
"But Dad, it's not..."
"Juliana, what I'm trying to tell you is I'm sorry. There was so much I wanted to give you, all of you. I guess I didn't see until recently how little I've actually provided."
"That's not true."
"Well, I think you know my heart's been in the right place. But if you line it up objectively, a man like, say, Mr. Losky adds up to a much better husband and father than a man like me does. He's around more, he provides more, and he's probably a lot more fun."
My dad wasn't one to go fishing for compliments or signs of appreciation. But still, I couldn't quite believe he actually thought that. "Dad, I don't care how it looks on paper. I think you're the best dad ever. And when I marry somebody someday, I sure don't want him to be like Mr. Losky. I want him to be like you." He looked at me like he couldn't quite believe his ears.
"Is that so?"
he said with a grin.
"Well, I'll remind you of that as your someday approaches."
That turned the rest of the trip around. We laughed and joked and talked about all kinds of things. But as we neared home, there was one thing the conversation kept turning back to. Pancakes. My mother, though, had other plans. She'd spent the morning scrubbing floors and nixed the pancakes.
"I need something with more staying power, like grilled ham and cheese with onions," she said. "Lots of onions." "Scrubbing floors?"
my dad said.
"It's Sunday, Trina. Why were you scrubbing floors?"
"Nervous energy." She looked at me.
"How'd it go?"
"Okay. I'm glad I went." She glanced at my dad and then at me.
"Well, good," she sighed, then said, "I also felt like scrubbing because I got a call from Patsy." "Losky?"
my dad asked.
"Is something wrong?"
My mother pushed a few wisps of hair back and said,
"No. She called to invite us over for dinner on Friday."
We blinked at her a moment. Then I asked, "All of us?"
"Yes."
I could see what my dad was thinking. Why? All these years of living across the street and we'd never been invited over. Why now? My mom could see it too. She sighed and said,
"Robert, I don't exactly know why, but she was insistent. She was practically in tears, saying how sorry she was that she'd never invited us before and how she'd really like to get to know us better." "What did you tell her?"
"I couldn't very well say no. She was being so nice, and Chet has really done a lot." She shrugged and said,
"I said we'd go. It's set for 6 o'clock Friday night."
"Really?" I asked. She shrugged again.
"I think it might be nice. A little strange, but nice." "Well, okay then,"
my dad said.
"I won't schedule any overtime for Friday. What about the boys?"
"There's no gig on the calendar, and they're not scheduled to work, but I haven't talked to them about it yet."
"Are you sure they want us all over there?"
my dad asked. My mom nodded.
"She insists."
I could tell the whole idea of dinner at the Loskys was making my dad pretty uncomfortable. But we could both see that something about this invitation meant a lot to my mother.
All right, then,
he said, and got to work slicing cheese and onions. For the rest of the afternoon, I sort of lazed around, reading and daydreaming. And at school the next day, I couldn't seem to concentrate. My thoughts kept turning back to David. I wondered what my grandparents had been like and what they'd gone through having a son like him. I daydreamed a lot about the sycamore tree, too, which at first I thought was because I was feeling melancholy. But then I remembered how my mother had called the sycamore a testimony to endurance. It had survived being damaged as a sapling. It had grown. Other people thought it was ugly, but I never had. Maybe it was all how you looked at it. Maybe there were things I saw as ugly that other people thought were beautiful. Like Shelley Stahl's, a perfect example. To me, there was absolutely nothing to recommend her. But the rest of the world seemed to think she was the cat's meow. Meow. Anyway, I sort of drifted through the week like that. Until Thursday. Thursday, our social studies class went to the library to do research for our famous historical figure report. I'd chosen Susan B. Anthony and her fight for the right to vote. And I was in the middle of tracking down some books when Darla Tressler flagged me from the end of a stack. Darla was in a few of my classes, but we weren't really friends. So I looked behind me to see who else she might be flagging. Come here, she mouthed, frantically waving me over. So I hurried over. She pointed through the column of books and whispered, Listen. It was Garrett's voice, and then Bryce's. And they were talking about me, about my chickens, and salmonella poisoning, and how Bryce had been throwing away my eggs, and about me fixing up our yard. Bryce was sounding like he felt really bad, but then suddenly my blood ran cold. He was talking about David. And then Garrett laughed and said, A retard? Well, that explains a lot, doesn't it? You know, about Julie. For a second, there was silence. And at that moment, I was sure they must be able to hear my heart pounding in my chest. But then Bryce laughed and said, Oh, right. I positively crumbled onto the floor. And in a flash, the voices were gone. Darla checked around the corner, then sat beside me saying, Oh, Jules, I'm so, so sorry. I thought he was about to confess that he's been crushing on you. What? Darla, Bryce does not have a crush on me. Where have you been? Haven't you noticed the way he's been looking at you? That boy is lost in Loveland. Oh, obviously. You just heard him, Darla. Yeah, but yesterday, I caught him staring at you, and he said there was a bee in your hair. A bee, girl. Is that the lamest cover-up you've ever heard, or what? Darla, the way things have been going, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a bee in my hair. Oh, you think you're that sweet, huh? Just attract bees like honey? Well, honey, the only bee you're attracting around here is B-R-Y-C-E. Cute, yeah, but after what I just heard, I'd stomp and grind, girl. Stomp and grind. She got up to go, but turned and said, Don't worry, I won't jabber. I just shook my head and forgot about Darla. How wrong could a person be? It was what Bryce and Garrett had said that I couldn't forget. How could they be so cruel and so stupid? Is this what my father had gone through growing up? The more I thought about it, the angrier I got. What right did Bryce have to make fun of my uncle? How dare he? I felt fire burn in my cheeks and a cold, hard knot tighten in my heart. And in a flash, I knew. I was through with Bryce Loskey. He could keep his brilliant blue eyes. He could keep his two-faced smile and my kiss. That's right, he could keep that too. I was never, ever going to talk to him again. I stormed back to the section of books on Susan B. Anthony, found two that would work, and then went back to my table. But as I was collecting my things to check out of the library, I remembered. The next day, we were going to the Loskys' house for dinner. I zipped up my backpack and threw it on my shoulder. Surely, after what had happened, I had the right to vote against going. Didn't I?
The Serious Willies. Realizing that my father had the same sense of humor as Garrett gave me the serious willies. I had the hardest time just looking at my dad, let alone speaking to him. But at about 5 o'clock Friday afternoon, I agreed with him about one thing. We should have barbecued. A barbecue is more, you know, low-key. Instead, my mom was flying around the kitchen slicing and dicing and barking orders at Dad and me like the president was coming to dinner. We swept the floor, put an extra leaf in the table, brought in 5 more chairs, and set the table. We set it all wrong, of course, but all my mother had to do was shuffle things around to make it right. It looked the same to me, but what do I know? She put out candlesticks and said, "Rick, can you load the dishes and run them? I'd like a chance to get cleaned up. After that, you can change. And Bryce, what are you wearing?" "Mom, it's the bakers. Are you trying to make them feel totally worthless?" Trina and I agreed on a dress-up. "So, but why?" My dad put a hand on my shoulder and said, "So we can all feel equally uncomfortable, son." "Women." I looked at her and said, "Does that mean I have to wear a tie?" "No, but some sort of button-down instead of a t-shirt would be nice." I went down to my room and ripped through my closet looking for something with buttons. There were lots of buttons, all right. Lots of geeky buttons. I thought about boycotting my mother's dress code requirements, but instead I started putting on shirts. 20 minutes later, I still wasn't dressed, and I was extremely ticked off about it because what did it matter? Why did I care what I looked like at this stupid dinner? I was acting like a girl. Then, through a gap in my curtains, I saw them coming. Out their front door, down their walkway, across the street. It was like a weird dream. They seemed to be floating toward our house, all 5 of them. I pulled the shirt off my bed, punched my arms in, and buttoned up. 2 seconds later, the doorbell rang, and Mom called, "Can you get that, Bryce?" Luckily, Granddad beat me to it. He greeted them all like they were long-lost family, and even seemed to know which one was Matt and which one was Mike. One was wearing a purple shirt, and the other was wearing a green one, so it shouldn't have been that hard to remember which was which. But they came in and pinched my cheeks and said, "Hey, baby brother, how's it going?" And I got so mad I mixed them up again. My mother zoomed in from the kitchen, saying, "Come in, come in. It's so nice you all could make it." She called, "Lynetta, Rick, we've got company." But then stopped short when she saw Julie and Mrs. Baker. "Well, what's this?" she asked. "Homemade pies?" Mrs. Baker said, "Blackberry cheesecake and pecan." "They look wonderful, absolutely wonderful." My mother was acting so hyper I couldn't believe it. She took Julie's pie, then whooshed a path to the kitchen with Mrs. Baker. Lynetta appeared from around the corner, which made Matt and Mike grin and say, "Hey, Lynn, looking good." Black skirt, black nails, black eyes. For a nocturnal rodent, yeah, I suppose she was looking good. They disappeared down to Lynetta's room, and when I turned around, my granddad was taking Mr. Baker into the front room, which left me in the entry hall with Julie, alone. She wasn't looking at me. She seemed to be looking at everything but me, and I felt like an idiot standing there in my geeky button-down shirt with pinched cheeks and nothing to say. And I got so nervous about having nothing to say that my heart started going wacko on me, hammering like it does right before a race or a game or something. On top of that, she looked more like that stupid picture in the paper than the picture did, if that makes any sense. Not because she was all dressed up. She wasn't. She was wearing some normal-looking dress and normal-looking shoes, and her hair was the way it always is, except maybe a little more brushed out. It was the way she was looking at everything but me, with her shoulders back and her chin out and her eyes flashing. We probably only stood there for 5 seconds, but it felt like a year. Finally, I said, "Hi, Julie." Her eyes flashed at me, and that's when it sank in. She was mad. She whispered, "I heard you and Garrett making fun of my uncle in the library, and I don't want to speak to you. You understand me? Not now, not ever." My mind was racing. Where had she been? I hadn't seen her anywhere near me in the library. And had she heard it, or had she heard it from somebody else? I tried to tell her it wasn't me, that it was Garrett, all Garrett, but she shut me down and made tracks for the front room to be with her dad. So I'm standing there, wishing I'd punched Garrett out in the library so Julie wouldn't stick me in the same class as someone who makes retard jokes, when my dad shows up and claps me on the shoulder. "So, how's the party, son?" Speak of the devil. I wanted to whack his hand off my shoulder. He leans out so he can see into the front room and says, "Hey, the dad cleans up pretty good, doesn't he?" I shrug away from him. "Mr. Baker's name is Robert, Dad."
"Yeah, you know, I knew that."
He rubs his hands together and says, "I guess I ought to go in and say hello. Coming?"
"Nah, Mom probably needs my help."
I didn't run off to the kitchen, though. I stood there and watched Mr. Baker shake my father's hand. And as they stood there pumping and smiling, this weird feeling started coming over me again. Not about Julie, about my father. Standing next to Mr. Baker, he looked small. Physically small. And compared to the cut of Mr. Baker's jaw, my dad's face looked kind of weaselly. This is not the way you want to feel about your father. When I was little, I'd always thought that my dad was right about everything, and that there wasn't a man on earth he couldn't take. But standing there looking in, I realized that Mr. Baker could squash him like a bug. Worse, though, was the way he was acting. Watching my dad chum it up with Julie's dad, it was like seeing him lie. To Mr. Baker, to Julie, to my grandfather, to everybody. Why was he being such a worm? Why couldn't he just act normal? You know, civil. Why did he have to put on such a phony show? This went way beyond keeping the peace with my mother. This was disgusting. And people said I was the spitting image of my father. How often had I heard that one? I'd never thought about it much. But now, it was turning my stomach. Mom jingled the dinner bell and called, "Hors d'oeuvres are ready!" And then saw me still standing in the hallway. "Bryce, where'd your sister and the boys go?" I shrugged. "Down to her room, I think." "Go tell them, would you? And then come have some hors d'oeuvres." "Sure," I said. Anything to get rid of the taste in my mouth. Lynetta's door was closed, and normally I would have knocked and called, "Mom wants you," or "Dinner," or something. But in that split second before my knuckles hit wood, my hand became possessed by evil baby brother. I turned the knob and walked right in. Does Lynetta freak out or throw stuff at me and scream for me to get out? No. She ignores me. Matt and Mike give me a nod, and Lynetta sees me, but she's got her hands over some headphones, and her whole body's bobbing up and down as she listens to a portable CD player. Matt or Mike whispers, "It's about over. We'll be right there." Like, of course I was there to say it was time to eat. What else would I be doing there? Something about that made me feel, I don't know, left out. I wasn't even a person to those guys. I was just baby brother. Nothing new there, but now it really bugged me. Like all of a sudden, I didn't fit in anywhere. Not at school, not at home, and every time I turned around, another person I'd known forever felt like a stranger to me. Even I felt like a stranger to me. standing around, eating little round crackers smeared with whipped cheese and fish eggs didn't do much for my mood either. My mother was acting like an entire swarm of busy bees. She was everywhere, in the kitchen, out of the kitchen, serving drinks, handing out napkins, explaining the food, but not eating a thing. Lynetta didn't buy Mom's explanation on the hors d'oeuvres. She wound up dissecting hers, categorizing the parts into gross, disgusting, and revolting. Hanging near her didn't stop the baker boys from shoving crackers in whole, though. Man, I was just waiting for them to wrap themselves around a table leg and flex. Julie, her dad, and my grandfather were off to the side, talking nonstop about something, and my dad was over with Mrs. Baker looking about as stupid as I felt, standing by myself, talking to no one. My mom flutters over to me and says, "You doing okay, honey?" "Yeah," I tell her, but she forces me over to where Granddad is anyway. "Go on, go on," she whispers. "Dinner will be ready in a minute." So I stand there, and the group of them opens up, but it's more like a reflex than anything. No one says a word to me. They just keep right on talking about perpetual motion. Perpetual motion. My friend, I didn't even know what perpetual motion was. They were talking closed systems, open systems, resistance, energy source, magnetism. It was like joining a discussion in a different language. And Julie was saying stuff like, "Well, what if you put the magnets back to back, reverse the polarity?" Like she really understood what they were talking about. Then my granddad and her dad would explain why her idea wouldn't work, but all that did was make Julie ask another question. I was completely lost. And even though I was pretending to follow along with what they were saying, what I was really doing was trying not to stare at Julie. When my mom called us for dinner, I did my best to pull Julie aside and apologize to her. But she gave me the cold shoulder, and who could blame her, really? I sat down across from her, feeling pretty low. Why hadn't I said something to Garrett in the library? I didn't have to punch him. Why hadn't I just told him he was out of line? After Mom served everyone their food, Dad seemed to decide that he ought to be the one directing the conversation. "So, Mike and Matt," he says, "you're seniors this year." "Amen," they say together. "Amen, as in you're glad high school's over?" "Absolutely." My father starts twirling his fork. "Why's that?" Matt and Mike look at each other, then back at my dad. The regurgitation gets to you after a while. "Isn't that funny?" he says, looking around the table. "High school was probably the best time of my life." Matt or Mike says, "Seriously? Dude, it's totally lame." Mrs. Baker shoots him a look, but that doesn't stop him. "Well, it is, Mom. It's that whole Robotron attitude of education. Confine, confute, conform. I've had totally enough of that scene." My dad eyes my mom with a little "I told you so" grin, then says to Matt and Mike, "So I take it college is out of the question." God, what was with him? In a flash, I was clutching my fork and knife, ready to duke it out for a couple of guys who pinched my cheeks and called me baby brother. I took a deep breath and tried to relax, tried to dive down to calmer water. This wasn't my fight. Besides, Matt and Mike seemed cool with it. "Oh no," they said. "College is a total possibility. Yeah, we got accepted a couple of places, but we're going to give the music thing a shot first." "Oh, the music thing," my father says. Matt and Mike look at each other, then shrug and get back to eating. But Lynetta glares at him and says, "Your sarcasm is not appreciated, Dad." Lynn, says Matt or Mike. "It's cool. Everyone's like that about it. It's a show-me-don't-tell-me thing." "That's a great idea," Lynetta says, jumping out of her seat and dashing down the hall. Mom freezes, not sure what to do about Lynetta, but then Mrs. Baker says, "Dinner is absolutely delicious, Patsy." "Thanks, Trina. It's nice to have all of you over." There's about 3 seconds of quiet, and then Lynetta comes in and jabs at the CD player buttons until the drawer slides back in.
Lynn, no, not a good idea, says Matt or Mike.
Yeah, Lynn, it's not exactly dinner music.
Tough, says Lynetta, and cranks the volume.
Boom, whack, boom, boom, whack. The candles practically shake in their holders, then guitars rip through the air and about blow them out. Matt and Mike look up at the speakers, then grin at each other and call over to my dad,
"Surround sound! Awesome setup, Mr. Losky!"
All the adults were dying to jump up and turn the thing down, but Lynetta stood guard and just glowered at them. And when the song's over, Lynetta pulls out the CD, punches off the player, and then smiles. Actually smiles at Matt and Mike and says, "That is the raddest song. I want to hear it again and again and again." Matt or Mike says to my dad, "You probably don't like it, but it's what we do."
"You boys wrote that song?"
"Uh-huh."
He motions Lynetta to pass the CD over, saying,
"Just the one song?"
Matt or Mike laughs and says, "Dude, we've got 1,000 songs, but there's only 3 on the demo." Dad holds up the CD.
"This is the demo?"
"Yeah."
He looks at it a minute and says,
"So if you're piss poor, how do you afford to press CDs?"
"Dad!" Lynetta snaps at him.
"It's okay, Lynn. Just a joke, right, Mr. Losky?"
My dad laughs a little and says,
"Right."
But then adds, "Although I am a little curious, this is obviously not a home-done demo, and I happen to know studio time's cost prohibitive for most bands." Matt and Mike interrupt him with a slamming hard high five, and while I'm getting uptight about my dad asking them questions about money of all things, my mom's fumbling all over herself, trying to sweep away my dad's big paw prints.
"When Rick and I met, he was playing in a band."
Poached salmon was suddenly swimming down the wrong hatch. And while I'm choking, Lynetta's bugging out her raccoon eyes, gasping,
"You played in a band? What did you play, clarinet?"
"No, honey," my mom says, trying to hold it all together. "Your father played guitar."
"Guitar? Cool," Matt or Mike says. "Rock, country, jazz?"
"Country," my dad says, "which is nothing to scoff at, boys. Dude, we know. Total respect, man."
"And when our band looked into getting a demo made, it was astronomically expensive. That was in a big city where there was a little competition. Getting a demo made around here, I didn't even know there was a facility."
Matt and Mike are still grinning.
"There's not."
"So where'd you go, and how'd you afford it?"
My mother whacks him under the table again, so he says, "I'm just curious, Patsy." Matt and Mike lean in.
"We did it ourselves."
"This right here? You did this yourselves? That's impossible."
He's looking almost mad about it.
"How'd you get the gear?"
My mom kicks him again, but Dad turns on her and says,
"Stop it, would you? I'm just curious."
Matt or Mike says, "It's cool, Mrs. Losky." He smiles at my dad and says,
"We kept cruising the internet and the trades looking for a deal. Everyone's blowing out their old analog gear for digital because that's the move everyone else has made. Digital, if you want to know our opinion, is weak. You lose too much of the waveform. There's not enough fat to it. And obviously, we like it beefy."
My granddad puts up a finger and says,
"But a CD's digital, so..."
"Exactly. But that is the last and only step we'll compromise on. It's just a necessity of being part of the industry. Everyone wants CDs, but the multi-track and the mixdown to 2-track is analog. And we could afford it, Mr. Losky, because we got used gear, and we've been saving up our pennies since we were 12 years old.
He grins and says, "You still play? We could, you know, lay down some of your tunes if you want."
My dad looks down, and for a second I couldn't tell if he was going to get mad or cry. Then he sort of snorts and says,
"Thanks, but that's not me anymore."
Which was probably the only honest thing my dad said all night. After that, he was quiet.
He'd try to plaster up a smile now and then, but man, underneath it, he was broody. And I was feeling kind of bad for him. Was he thinking about the good old days playing in a band? I tried picturing him in cowboy boots and a cowboy hat, with a guitar strapped across his shoulder, playing some old Willie Nelson song. He was right. It just wasn't him. But the fact that it ever had been made me feel even more like a stranger in a strange land. Then, when the night was over and the bakers were piling out the front door, something else strange happened. Julie touched my arm. And for the first time that night, she was looking at me. It was that look, too, channeled directly and solely at me. She says, "I'm sorry I was so angry when we first came in. Everyone had a good time, and I think your mom's really nice for inviting us." Her voice was quiet, almost a whisper. I just stood there like a moron, staring at her. "Bryce," she says, touching my arm again. "Did you hear me? I'm sorry." I managed to nod, but my arm was tingling, and my heart was pounding, and I felt myself pulling toward her. Then she was gone, out the door, and into the night, part of a chorus of happy goodbyes. I tried to catch my breath. What was that? What was wrong with me? My mother closed the door and said, "There, now what did I tell you? That is one delightful family. Those boys are nothing like I expected. Lynetta, why didn't you tell me they were so charming?"
"They're drug dealers is what they are."
Everyone turned to my father and dropped their jaws. "What?" my mother said.
"There is no other way those boys could afford to buy recording gear like that." He glared at Lynetta. "Isn't that so?"
Lynetta's eyes looked like they were going to pop right out of her head.
"Rick, please," my mother said. "You can't just make accusations like that."
"It's the only thing that makes sense, Patsy. Believe me, I know how musicians are. There is no other explanation for this."
Lynetta shouted, "I happen to know for a fact that they don't use ordeal. Where do you get off saying something like that? You are such a two-faced, condescending, narrow-minded jackass."
There was a split second of silence, and then he slapped her. Smack, right across the cheek. That put my mother in his face like I'd never seen and sent my sister screaming insults over her shoulder as she ran down to her room. My heart was pounding. Lynetta was right. And I almost got in his face too and told him so. But then my granddad pulled me aside and we both retreated to our own little corners of the house. Pacing around my room, I had the urge to go talk to Lynetta, to tell her that she was right, that Dad was way out of line. But I could hear her through the walls, crying and screaming while my mom tried to calm her down. Then she stormed out of the house to who knows where, and my mom took up with my dad again. So I stayed put, and even though the earth quit quaking around 11 o'clock, there were tremors out there. I could feel them. As I lay in my bed staring out the window at the sky, I thought about how my dad had always looked down on the bakers. How he'd put down their house, and their yard, and their cars, and what they did for a living. How he'd called them trash, and made fun of Mr. Baker's paintings. And now, I was seeing that there was something really cool about that family. All of them. They were just real. And who were we? There was something spinning wickedly out of control inside this house. It was like seeing inside the baker's world had opened up windows into our own. And the view was not a pretty one. Where had all this stuff come from? And why hadn't I ever seen it before?
The dinner. By the time I got home, I knew it would be selfish of me to boycott the Loskys' dinner party. My mother had already spent a lot of time humming over pie recipes and going through her closet for something suitable to wear. She'd even bought a new shirt for Dad and had scrutinized what the boys intended to wear. Obviously, she was looking forward to the dinner. Not that I really understood that, but I didn't want to ruin everything by telling her about my newfound hatred of Bryce. And Dad felt bad enough about David already. The last thing he needed was to hear about crackpot comments made by immature eighth graders. So, that night I went through the motions of baking pies with my mother and convinced myself that I was doing the right thing. One dinner couldn't change anyone's life. I just had to get through it. Friday at school, I avoided the blue-eyed brat the best I could. But that night, as I got dressed, I found myself staring at the painting my father had given me and became furious all over again. Bryce had never been a friend to me, ever. He hadn't made a stand for the tree, he'd thrown away my eggs, and he'd made fun of me at my uncle's expense. Why was I playing along like we were jolly friends and neighbors? When my mother called that it was time to go, I went out in the hall with every intention of telling her that I would not, could not, go to the Loskys for dinner. But she looked so lovely and happy that I couldn't. I just couldn't. I took a deep breath, wrapped up a pie, and shuffled across the street behind my brothers and parents. Chet answered the door. Maybe I should have been mad at him, too, for telling the Loskys about my uncle. But I wasn't. I hadn't asked him not to tell, and he certainly wasn't the one making fun of David. Mrs. Losky came up behind Chet, whisked us in, and fluttered about. And even though she had quite a bit of makeup on, I was surprised to see the blueness of bags beneath her eyes. Then Mrs. Losky and my mother went off with the pies. My brothers vanished down the hall with Lynetta, and my father followed Chet into the living room. And wasn't that just dandy? That left me alone in the foyer with Bryce. He said hi to me, and I lost it. I spun on him, snapping, "Don't you speak to me. I overheard you and Garrett in the library, and I don't want to talk to you now or ever." I started to walk into the living room, but he stopped me. Julie, wait. He whispered, "I'm not the bad guy here. That was Garrett. That was all Garrett." I glared at him. "I know what I heard." No, you don't. I was feeling bad about, you know, the eggs and what I'd said about your yard. I didn't know anything about your uncle or what kind of situation your family was in, okay? I just wanted to talk to someone about it. Our eyes locked for a minute, and for the first time, the blueness of his didn't freeze up my brain. "I heard you laugh. He made a joke about me being a retard and you laughed. Julie, you don't understand. I wanted to punch him. Really, I did. But we were in the library. So instead, you laughed." He shrugged and looked miserable and sheepish. "Yeah." I left him. Just walked into the living room and left him. If he was making it up, he was quite an actor. If he was telling the truth, then Chet was right. He was a coward. Either way, I didn't want to be anywhere near him. I stood beside my father and tried to follow his discussion with Chet about something they'd both read in the paper. My father was saying,
"But what he's proposing would require a perpetual motion machine, so it's not possible."
Chet replied,
"Maybe in the context of what scientists know now, but do you rule it out completely?"
At that moment, I was feeling absolutely no scientific curiosity. But in a desperate attempt to block Bryce Loskey from my mind, I asked, "What's a perpetual motion machine?" My father and Chet glanced at each other, chuckled, then shrugged, giving me the sense that they'd just agreed to let me into a secret club. My father explained,
"It's a machine that runs without any external power source. No electricity, no fuel, no water propulsion, nothing."
Chet glanced over my shoulder and asked rather absently,
"You think that's a doable thing?"
What had distracted him? Was Bryce still in the foyer? Why didn't he just go away? I forced myself to focus on the conversation. Do I think that's a doable thing? Well, I don't really know. All machines use energy, right? Even real efficient ones. And that energy has to come from somewhere.
What if the machine generated it itself?
Chet asked. But one eye was still on the foyer. How could it do that? Neither of them answered me. Instead, my father stuck out his hand and said,
"Good evening, Rick. Nice of you to have us over."
Mr. Losky pumped my dad's hand and joined our group, making little comments about the weather. When that topic was all dried up, he said,
"And wow, that yard of yours has really come along. I told Cheddar that we ought to hire him out. He really knows his pickets, doesn't he?"
He was joking, I think. But my father didn't take it that way, and neither did Chet. I was afraid of what might happen next, but then Mrs. Losky tinkled a little dinner bell and called, "Hors d'oeuvres, everybody!" The hors d'oeuvres were delicious. But when my father whispered that the teeny tiny black berries on top of the crackers weren't berries at all but caviar, I stopped mid-bite. Fish eggs? Repulsive. Then my father pointed out that I ate chicken eggs all the time, so why get squeamish over fish eggs? He had a point. I hesitantly finished the cracker, and before long, I was having another. Bryce was standing all by himself across the room, and every time I happened to look his way, he was staring at me. Finally, I completely turned my back on him and said to my father, "So, who's trying to invent a perpetual motion machine anyway?" My father laughed.
"Mad scientists all over the world."
"Really?"
"Yes, for hundreds of years."
"Well, what do they do? What's one look like?" It wasn't long before Chet was in on the discussion. And just as I was finally starting to catch on to magnetism, gyroscopic particles, and zero-point energy, I felt someone standing behind me. It was Bryce. I could feel my cheeks flush with anger. Couldn't he see I wanted to be left alone? I took a step away from him. But what that did was open up the group and allow him to move forward. Now he was standing in our circle, listening to our discussion. Well, surely he was not interested in perpetual motion. I barely was myself. So I reasoned, continuing our discussion would drive him away. I dove back in, and when the conversation started to peter out, I came up with my own ideas on perpetual motion machines. I was like a perpetual idea machine, spinning ridiculous suggestions right out of the air. And still, he wouldn't leave. He didn't say anything. He just stood there, listening. Then, when Mrs. Losky announced that dinner was ready, Bryce held my arm and whispered,
"Julie, I'm sorry. I've never been so sorry about anything in my whole life. You're right. I was a jerk, and I'm sorry."
I yanked my arm free from his grasp and said, "It seems to me you've been sorry about a whole lot of things lately." And left him there with his apology hanging wounded in the air. It didn't take me long to realize that I'd made a mistake. I should have let him say he was sorry, and then simply continued to ignore him. But I'd snapped at him in the middle of an apology, which somehow made me the rude one. I sneaked a peek at him across the table, but he was watching his dad, who was asking my brothers about graduating and their plans for college. I had, of course, seen Mr. Losky many times, but usually from a distance. Still, it seemed impossible that I'd never noticed his eyes before. They were blue, brilliant blue, and although Mr. Losky's were set farther back and were hidden somewhat by his eyebrows and cheekbones, there was no mistaking where Bryce had gotten his eyes. His hair was black, too, like Bryce's, and his teeth were white and straight. even though Chet had called Bryce the spitting image of his father. I'd never really thought of them as looking alike. But now I saw that they did look alike. Though where his dad seemed kind of smug, Bryce seemed... well, right now he seemed angry. Then, from the other side of the table, I heard... "Your sarcasm is not appreciated, Dad." Mrs. Losky gave a small gasp, and everyone looked at Lynetta. "Well, it's not," she said. In all the years we've lived across the street from the Loskys, I've said about 10 words to Lynetta, and she's said fewer back. To me, she's scary. So it wasn't a surprise to see her glaring at her father, but it was uncomfortable. Mrs. Losky was keeping a smile perched on her face, but she was blinking a lot, glancing nervously around the table. I looked from one person to the next, too, wondering if dinner at the Loskys was always this tense. Suddenly, Lynetta got up and dashed down the hall, but she was back in a flash with a CD in her hand. And when she put it in the player, I recognized one of my brother's songs blaring through the speakers. We'd heard this song, Candle Ice, pouring out of my brother's bedroom at least a million times, so we were used to it. But I looked over at my mom, worried that she might be embarrassed by the distorting guitars and the gritty lyrics. This was definitely not caviar music. She seemed a little uncertain, but in a happy way. She was sharing secret smiles with my father, and honestly, I think she even giggled. My dad was looking amused, although he was very reserved about it, and it took me until the end of the song to realize that he was proud. Proud that this noise came from his boys. That surprised me. Dad has never been real big on any rendition of my brother's band, although he's never really criticized it either. But then, Mr. Losky started grilling Matt and Mike about how they'd afforded to record their own music, and they explained about working and saving and shopping for good deals on equipment. And that's when I realized why my father was proud. My brothers were feeling pretty good too, you could tell. And it was no wonder with the way Lynetta was carrying on about how great Candle Ice was. She was positively gushing, which seemed very odd, coming from Lynetta. As I looked around, it struck me that we were having dinner with a group of strangers. We'd lived across the street for years, but I didn't know these people at all. Lynetta did know how to smile. Mr. Losky was clean and smooth on the outside, but there was a distinct whiff of something rotten buried just beneath the surface. And the ever-efficient Mrs. Losky seemed flustered, almost hyper. Was it having us over that was making her nervous? Then there was Bryce, the most disturbing of all because I had to admit that I didn't really know him either. And based on what I'd discovered lately, I didn't care to know anymore. Looking across the table at him, all I got was a strange, detached, neutral feeling. No fireworks, no leftover anger or resurging flutters. Nothing. After we'd had dessert and it was time to go, I went up to Bryce and told him I was sorry for having been so fierce when we'd first come in. I should have let you apologize, and really, it was very nice of your family to have us over. I know it was a lot of work, and well, I think my mom had a really good time, and that's what matters to me. We were looking right at each other, but it was almost as though he didn't hear me. Bryce? I said I'm sorry. He nodded, and then our families were waving goodbye and saying goodnight. I walked behind my mother, who was holding hands with my father, and beside my brothers, who were carrying home what was left of our pies. We all wound up in the kitchen, and Matt poured himself a glass of milk and said to Mike, "That Mr. Losky was sniffing us out pretty good tonight, wasn't he?" "No kidding. Maybe he thinks we're hot for his daughter." "Not me, dude. You?" Mike got himself a glass of milk, too. "That's Skylar's gig. No way I'd go there." He grinned. "But she was really cool tonight. Did she come down on Papa Bear or what?" My dad took a paper plate out of the cupboard and cut a slice of pie.
You boys showed a lot of restraint tonight. I don't know if I could have kept my cool that way.
Ah, he's just, you know, entrenched, Matt said. Gotta adjust to the perspective and deal from there.
Then he added, not that I'd want him as my dad. Mike practically sprayed his milk.
Dude, can you imagine?
Then Matt gave my dad a slap on the back and said,
no way, I'm sticking with my main man here.
My mom grinned from across the kitchen and said,
me too.
I'd never seen my father cry, and he didn't exactly sit there bawling, but there were definitely tears welling up in his eyes. He blinked them back the best he could and said,
don't you boys want some pie to go with that milk?
Dude, said Matt as he straddled a chair. I was just thinking that.
Yeah, Mike added. I'm starved.
Get me a plate too, I called, as Mike dug through the cupboard.
But we just ate, my mother cried.
Come on, Trina, have some pie. It's delicious.
I went to bed that night feeling very full and very happy. And as I lay there in the dark, I wondered at how much emotion can go into any given day, and thought how nice it was to feel this way at the end of it. And as I nestled in and drifted off to sleep, my heart felt wonderfully free. The next morning, I still felt good. I went outside and sprinkled the yard, enjoying the splish and patter of water on soil, wondering when, that first little blade of grass would spring up into the sunshine. Then I went out back, cleaned the coop, raked the yard, and dug up some of the bigger weeds growing along the edges. Mrs. Stubbe leaned over the side fence as I was shoveling my rakings and weeds into a trash can and said,
how's it going, Juliana? Making neat for a rooster?
A rooster?
Why, certainly. Those hens need some motivation to start laying more.
It was true. Bonnie and Clydette and the others were only laying about half the eggs that they used to. But a rooster? I don't think the neighborhood would appreciate my getting a rooster, Mrs. Stubbe. Besides, we'd get chicks, and I don't think we can handle any more poultry back here.
Nonsense! You've spoiled these birds, giving them the whole yard. They can share the space, easily. How else are you going to maintain your business? Soon those birds won't be laying anything at all.
They won't?
Well, very little.
I shook my head, then said, they were just my chicks that grew into chickens and started laying eggs. I never really thought of it as a business.
Well, my run in a tab has probably contributed to that, and I'm sorry. I'll be sure and get you the whole sum this week, but consider buying yourself a rooster with some of it. I've got a friend down on Newcomb Street who is positively green over my deviled eggs. I gave her my recipe, but she says hers just don't taste the same.
She winked at me.
I'm certain she'd pay handsomely for a supply of my secret ingredient if it became available.
She turned to go, then said,
by the by, Juliana, you have done a mighty fine job on that front yard. Most impressive.
Thanks, Mrs. Stubbe, I called, as she slid open her patio door. Thanks very much. I finished scooping up the piles I'd made and thought about what Mrs. Stubbe had said. Should I really get a rooster? I'd heard that having one around made chickens lay more, whether they were in contact with each other or not. I could even breed my chickens and get a whole new set of layers. But did I really want to go through all of that again? Not really. I didn't want to be the neighborhood rancher. If my girls quit laying altogether, that would be just fine with me. I put away the rake and shovel, clucked a kiss on each of the hens, and went inside. It felt good to take charge of my own destiny. I felt strong and right and certain. Little did I know how a few days back at school would change all of that.
flipped. After the dinner, Julie was nice to me at school, which I hated. Mad was better than nice. Gaga was better than nice. It was like I was a stranger to her, and man, it bugged me. Bugged me big time.